Good evening. Nice to see you all. Nice to be here. It's dark now, mostly wherever we are. I was on a Zoom an hour ago with someone in California, and it was morning there. Very different, and yet the same sky. This afternoon, it was a beautiful sunny day here in Paris. And in between my various activities, I had a moment, and I took a chair, you know, how in French we say a chaise longue or something. I don't know what we say in English even, you know, like a chair that you can stretch out in outside in the garden or at the beach or by the pool or something. And so I took that out of the, it had been put away for the season, and I took it out and unfolded it and had a nice moment in the beautiful sun in my garden with the cats who came and sat next to me in the bamboo. And I looked up at the sky and it was absolutely spotless blue. And my immediate feeling, you know, just a flash, was of kind of relaxation, peace, ease. The blue sky evoked that for me. The blue sky with no clouds. It was almost like, oh, I don't have to worry about anything. Like, I don't have to worry about it raining or the sun going behind clouds. This was all just in a flash. This was not something I was thinking about at length. And I had taken a book with me, and I had taken my phone with me, and I fell asleep in the sunshine. And it was one of those delicious naps in the sunshine, or just perfect nap. And when I woke up, I realized, you know, the sky is just something wondrous. There's no pattern. There's no, like I said, spotless. So it's like it's like a wall. And traditionally in Zen practice, we sit facing the wall. That practice in my early years with Geno Roshi, we sat that way. And then at some point she decided she wanted people to, like with the practice that she created around the Sangha and Dana, was facing the world, going into the world, lay people. And so she had us facing in, facing each other and facing the, you know, the joys and sufferings of the world and all the different patterns of people and things, instead of looking at the wall, which is like looking at the sky, looking at emptiness, looking at the absolute. And so I became, you know, that's basically what I do with my Sangha too. Sometimes, although they haven't done it for a while, I have us for one afternoon maybe, or for a day, turn around and face the wall. Just to see the difference, to experiment with it, to see the difference, because it's important to see the difference. And there's something really powerful about that facing the wall. It's like looking at the sky that has no clouds. There's nothing you can hang on to. There's nothing you can grasp. There's nothing to distract you. Of course, if whoever has sat facing the wall, you know, you end up finding the one spot that's on the wall, or you, if you're lucky enough to be sitting in front of a window instead of the wall, then you're captivated by what's outside the window, or if the paint is cracked, or there's wallpaper in their design or something, we find stuff. But originally, there's no pattern. Originally, our true self is like that too. No patterns. It's like the sky. We say original face. So our original face, before we've put anything on it, before we've identified age, name, profession, nationality, smart, tall, shy, whatever those things are, before all of that, it's like the sky before the clouds. And I think when I sat down there and looked at the sky this afternoon, it was like I was taking a step back from the world of excitement and becoming involved with a project or I'd had a conversation with a colleague about writing workshop that I'm co-leading with a colleague, and I wasn't so happy with her. Some of the things she said, not that it was bad, but it's just not the way I would do it. So of course, immediately, oh, I don't agree on that point. Or she doesn't want to bring in any texts, to use any texts that might be controversial, might be heavy. Might be slightly, she knows I'm a Zen teacher, so she doesn't want anything that will be kind of spiritual, or what she thinks of being like that. She doesn't say this, but I can tell that's what she's thinking by the texts that I propose and she doesn't want. And I saw that I was not happy with that. At the same time, I was like, okay, it's fine. It's fine. What people write will be what people write. And we don't need to. I have total faith that people will write what they need to write. And I don't need to have any particular text to push them in that direction or not, you know. But I could see that I was very involved in that this afternoon then, and involved in just the busy stuff, you know, the cat throws up and I have to clean it up off the carpet, and I have to remember to go shopping because tomorrow I won't have time before I have to eat lunch, just stuff, you know. And when I sat down and looked up at the sky, it was like, there is a world in which we don't need to be excited. We don't need to be involved. We don't need to be grasping and figuring things out. It was just this peace and ease. And again, this was like 1 second where this happened. And yet, then the rest of the time I was out there probably an hour, and it just was so enjoyable. Just feeling the sun, you know, okay, this is like, we're entering the time when we're not gonna have that kind of sun and we won't be able to do that. And this is, you know, kind of the end of what we call Indian summer in American, or Actually, it's been adapted in French too, l'été indien. I don't know, in Portuguese, do you have that when you have the summer that still lingers into the autumn? Or do you have a phrase for that?
Yeah, it's related to a saint, as it, you should expect. Yeah. São Martinho, o verão de São Martinho. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. And why is it related to that saint, do you know?
No idea.
Okay. That's right, I've asked that question before.
It's at the end of October usually, and it's related to the chestnut season.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's around that time that St. Martin's Day happens to be.
So it's not related to when suddenly it gets warm again and it's like summer again. It's not like that.
Yes, it's true.
Oh, it is.
It is the San Martino summer. And in rural spaces, it is when people taste the wine after the la vendange. C'est le premier, the first wine, you know, with chestnuts. Yeah. And it's always very beautiful time, weather. Not always, I'm joking.
Yeah. Well, in English, and I think in French, it's kind of like that too, when we call it Indian summer. And I only recently, well, maybe in the past 10 years, learned what the origin of that term is, at least in English. I don't know in French, but in English, it is because, so there's this summer that apparently this warm weather that comes, and it tricks you into thinking that it's going to be summer again, but it's not real, and it is snatched away then. And it's called Indian summer. This is terribly racist. I mean, it's just really terrible that there's also a term in American English, Indian giver, someone who gives you something and then takes it back. It's called an Indian giver. And it was related to the native people, and the white people had this idea that they were liars, thieves, played tricks on you, treacherous. So they would make you feel really comfortable and then take it away. And that's where this term Indian summer, so it's like, it's fake. It's not true. It looks like it's summer, but it's not really. And I don't know in French if it's the same thing. If they picked that up from English without even thinking about it, or if it has something to do with India, I don't know. But so this is not fake. The sky is not fake. The warm sun today is not fake. It's not fake news. Saturday in our study group, we were talking about this notion of fake news and how the Kalamas who Buddha goes to visit are saying, you know, all these people come through town and they tell us this stuff, and they said the other people aren't telling the truth and that it's not good. And so what do we believe? And so the Buddha basically says, well, believe your experience. You know, and the experience of this big sky mind and the beautiful sun on your skin, it's not fake. Today, that's what it is. Tomorrow, it'll be something different, but that's what it is now. And the sky, that pristine, spotless sky, is always there. It's the equivalent of the absolute, what we say, you know, or emptiness. It's always there. And that aspect of your being is always there. So this is where it becomes interesting. So, okay, we can say, okay, the sky's always there. We know when we go in an airplane, we go above the clouds and there's the sky and sun, whatever. Okay, see that. But can we see that in ourselves? This is where it becomes crucial. Can we see that big sky true self in ourselves? The self that is, you know, beyond success and failure. The big sky self that is not changed, not tainted, can entirely embrace all of the clouds, all of the different patterns within you, which are part of the relative world, but is not changed by them. It's untouched, like the sky is untouched by the clouds. All the clouds have different forms and patterns. It's fascinating. Claudia can tell us something about that because she knows about this particular cloud. What is it in Australia? What is it?
The morning glory.
Yeah, and so what's the particularity of it?
Oh, it just that it happens once a year.
Uh-huh.
And he's huge and he's rolling. It's a rolling cloud.
Oh, right.
It's like 1,000 kilometers long.
And it's only in Australia?
It's precisely in the, it appears in the desert because it's like atmospheric phenomena and it's made at one point, but so it appears very early in the morning, just after darkness, you know, it's when the day is appearing. It arrives at this time and it's going to disappear, right? It's very, it doesn't last too long. It's very short. And it's in the desert, right? Somewhere when there is not a lot of people.
Okay. So, you know, that's one example of this, like this, all the circumstances come together to make this manifestation. And that's true of all of us. We're like that. All of these circumstances come together to make this manifestation of that's you. And yet it will quickly disappear as well. And doesn't change the sky, the big sky self of you. I just made that up today, this big sky self. I hadn't thought of it until I just started talking tonight, but that's actually not a bad, instead of true self or original face or something, big sky self, you know, it's like this, it's like the sky in which there are these phenomena. But when you, as we know in airplanes, and we've talked about this before, when you go up in the airplane, you go through the cloud and it might be a little bumpy sometimes, but you can't sit on the cloud or something. You can't walk on the clouds. In fact, we're always walking on the clouds because the clouds are no different than the earth in their nature. And so the sky is like telling us that there's this world where we don't need to become agitated and excited. There's no success and failure. There's no good and bad. And that is our nature. And it's so relaxing. It's like so peaceful. Now, if we bring that back to sitting on our cushion looking at the wall, the same thing is true. We feel that same, we can. I'm not saying we always do, but when we sit, we can have that experience of just this peace. I'm sure everyone on this screen has had that experience at one point or another, or you wouldn't keep doing it. There would be absolutely no reason to keep sitting if you didn't have something like that. It's like I've started doing Qigong. Well, about 6 months ago, I started doing Qigong. And, you know, it's in French, we say ingrat. It's like, sometimes it's really hard. And you just kind of repeat these like stuff, you know, these forms. And, but at some moment there's something. And I know that, and that's why I keep doing it, is because I connect with that. I don't know if it's the same thing as sitting as Zazen, but something that I connect with that is only accessible through that. And I'm told by my Qigong teacher that you know, the more you do it, then the more you recognize that, and the more it develops and becomes deeper and more regular and more consistent or something. Same thing with sitting. The more you do it, the more you experience that, and then you have glimpses, you have moments when you experience that big sky self. Even if you don't identify it like that, but you feel something. It's like when I looked up at the sky today, I didn't think big sky self and all of this, what I'm saying now. It was after that I thought that, but I recognized that feeling. And the wonder of, you know, really appreciating the sun on my skin and the warmth. And just the moment of, I rarely do that, take like an hour in the afternoon and just do nothing. But it was the perfect way, you know, there was no picking and choosing, as we say. And of course I have a preference where I want the big blue sky, no clouds, warm sun. However, if I hang on to that, then, and you all recognize this too, I imagine, if I hang on to that, then it's like it's over because it won't last and I'm not appreciating it in the same way. It's like when something is too perfect. It's, you know, I'm thinking of, I have a sports example because, as you know, I'm a sports fan. And there's this football team now in the UK, Manchester City, right? This team that used to be terrible. And its crosstown rival, Manchester United, was always the, you know, great team and had all the best stars. So now this Manchester City is like developed modern football to absolute perfection. And this year they brought in this young player who is just like a machine, and just scores goals all the time. And it's almost boring. I'm sure the fans don't think that, the fans of that team. And at some times it's beautiful. No, for the moment it's still beautiful. It's so beautifully executed and so wonderfully done. But, you know, already I can sense that it's kind of like, well, you know they're gonna win. And you know this is what's gonna happen. So it's too perfect almost, or it's getting to be too perfect. Sure, there's other examples of that kind of thing, you know. Can anybody think of something that's like too perfect? So,
ready? They call it the honeymoon phase when everything is clicking. It's always a certain period, the honeymoon phase.
Yeah. And actually, it can be, the honeymoon phase can last forever if we don't become attached to the honeymoon phase. yeah, or like seeking the perfect view, you know. So I have to like find the perfect beach, the perfect mountainside, mountain view. And it will, you know, and so then you set up your camera and you're going to do it, and then some kid runs across, you know, or it starts raining or something. Just as long as we're attached to the perfection, we miss the wondrous perfection, the big sky self-perfection of things as they are, let's say. Or, you know, I think in gardening, there's examples like this. You know, those of you who, Marlan, I'm sure you can relate, but, you know, like my husband, he's like Mr. Garden. And there's always something. To me, it looks absolutely perfect. Beautiful, amazing garden. I know, but those dahlias are too tall. I should have gotten a different kind. Or I shouldn't have planted that there. There's too much wind. This garden will never succeed because there's too much wind and that building is blocking the sunlight. And it's fabulous, the garden. It's absolutely big sky, wondrous garden. Don't need to be excited. No success and failure. And yet the patterns are beautiful. The clouds, like we say, it's beautiful manifestations. And all the different manifestations on the screen in front of us are just fabulous. And we can appreciate them fully if we can appreciate the big sky self. No patterns. There can't be one without the other. So, because each of the patterns is also big sky self. You know, it's like, there are seasons within seasons. So in summer, there is a spring of the summer, a winter of the summer, an autumn of the summer, and a summer of the summer. The same thing in winter. There's a spring of the winter and a fall of the winter and a winter of the winter and a summer of the winter. Are you following what I'm saying, or is this just like gibberish? Yeah. And there's seasons in a day and seasons in life. We're familiar more with the seasons in life. You know, we say it's the autumn of life or the spring of life when people are young. But there's also spring, summer, winter, fall of old age. There's also winter of childhood. There's also so there's seasons of the year, there's seasons of the seasons, there's seasons in a day, there are lives in the seasons. Because that's the nature of being, is this constant change. That big sky self is unchanged. Big sky self. The sky is unchanged. There's winter clouds. There's different formations of clouds. There's summer clouds. There's rain clouds. There's, you know, hurricane clouds, tornadoes, morning glories, all these different kinds of clouds. Yeah. The big sky self is, he's no reason to be excited. And because of that, it's possible to appreciate all the differences. So we can appreciate the different seasons, the different manifestations, night and day. Freely, we can experience that when we're not, when we are in contact, when we have experienced our big sky self, let's say something. So any questions or comments? Does it remind you of anything or raise issues or? Grisha.
Good evening. My internet is unstable. So I have one question and one story. Hope you understand. The story is, I don't know if it's because my children are at home, at school, but St. Martin's summer, it's not what my Portuguese friends were remembering. It's in the 11th of November. It's Chestnut Day. It was some knight returning from, I don't know, war, in cold weather, autumn. And when he was arriving home, somewhere in Portugal, he found a person begging. He didn't have anything to give to him, so, but it was cold, so he took off his cape and it cut off in half to give to the person. And immediately the sun came and the good weather came. And that night, now a saint, Saint Martin or São Martinho, had this power to stop the autumn for of getting wintering and cold. And I think our Indian summer comes from love. This is the story behind. And I don't think, and it's, for us in September and October, it's common to be hot, so I don't think we have the same Indian summer notion that you explained to us. I'm not sure about this. And it's the chestnut day. The day we eat chestnut is a seasoned fruit, and we eat wine, as Marlene was saying. And in 11 November, we should expect a summery day. The question is about the, thank you, lovely image of original self with no patterns. And, but then I start when you told, although the patterns are beautiful also, and you don't have one without the other. Okay, it's life manifesting, and now I'm thinking about human life, but I'm thinking of patterns of something conditioned, like suffering. And I'm having difficulties to catch the concept of beautiful patterns when they are bad. And this is not about I don't like to be sad, or I don't like to have, it's, you know, patterns like trauma, conditioning by lack of love in early childhood. But I don't know if I'm just thinking too much, but the original self with no patterns, it's a beautiful image. The patterns are beautiful, it's also a beautiful image, but I'm not believing the second one totally. And I would like to hear you more, if possible. Thank you.
No, thank you. Yes, of course, I understand some of the patterns we don't like, you know, and they're not pretty and they're not attractive and they make us feel bad or something. And the thing, when I said that about having, we can't have one without the other, that the, you know, I've used this image before and Anna can say it better than I can, but, you know, when we weave, we have, you know, these two parts, right? And you have to have them both. And the when we weave a piece of fabric or something, you know, you have the pieces that run like this and the pieces that run like that, and it's absolutely necessary, the two, otherwise there is no fabric. We suffer from the patterns when, this is like a really simplistic way of saying it, but when we are not in contact with, or when we're not aware of our big sky self. We are only involved from the cloud aspect of ourself. And as soon as we can see the big sky self, then that changes how we experience the clouds, the patterns. And like, as with the clouds that arise in the sky, with all these phenomena, these circumstances that bring them together, that come together to create that pattern, that cloud, same thing with us. Yes, there's all these karmic connections and experiences and stories and history and the way our parents were, and then how they were raised, and how then their parents were raised, and schools we went to, and all life experiences we've had, all of those phenomena come together, those karmic conditions come together to create this cloud, to create the patterns. And if we can, through our practice, through sitting, connect with the big sky self, which is not those patterns, then we can experience those patterns differently. And as the great Ram Dass, American who went and became an Advaita guru in India, said, someone asked him, oh, so now you don't have any neurosis, you don't have any difficulties, depression, anything. He said, no, it's not at all like that. It's just that now the neuroses have become these little things that hop around from time to time on the side, and they don't bother me. My life is not determined by that. He's aware of them. He doesn't push them away. But his life is not determined by it. The big sky self is what, I don't know if it's container is not really the word, but is the background, is the foundation of who he truly is, is the nature of who he truly is. And therefore, the other stuff, it's like I was saying about the queen a couple of weeks ago, how she, the notion of a monarch is to embody the absolute. And then we have governments who do all the crappy stuff, you know, in the relative world. And the absolute that the monarch is, or the big sky self, let's say, instead of the absolute or the monarch, has all of these basic goodness aspects, compassion, wisdom, love, tolerance, patience, equanimity, all of these characteristics, this all characterizes the big sky self. And we can we put that big sky self to the service of our being in the relative world? So that could be mean working on our patterns and difficulties. That could mean, training to work with homeless people. It could be in your workplace, not, you know, engaging in conflict with colleagues. It could be, you know, raising your children in a loving, patient, tolerant way. All of those qualities that we think of as positive, that's who we truly are. It's like the sky. That's sky is that. The big sky self is that. So I don't know if that answered the question. Sounds easy.
It did. And I was remembering, I was here when, I don't know if she make it more than once, when Anna explained the fabric. And what happens is we lose touch. And I keep forgetting. And I think this is not the first time I'm asking, or the question comes. But when it's not good, when the pattern, when, and I keep forgetting, it's incredible. But yeah, I got it. Hopefully I remind it when I'm, when I let the cloud be the all. I lose touch, it's incredible.
We do, it's like we in sitting when we lose track of the count of the breath, or we drift off and start thinking about our, you know, what we'll do next week or what we did last summer or something, you know, or the person sitting next to me, or fantasizing about, you know, the new car I'm going to buy or something. It's the same thing on a mini version, but it's the same thing.
Thank you.
Lisa?
Freddie, we're raised his head for the second time.
So. Oh, okay, I missed it. Okay, sorry, Freddie. Go ahead, Freddie. Sorry.
I just wanted to add something. You say it's the trickster is a native Indian folklore character. Mm-hmm. The trickster. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it comes from the famous folklore character, native Indian character.
Wait, I'm not sure I understand. What do you mean?
The trickster is a famous native Indian character, the trickster. It takes many forms.
Yeah.
So it's from their tradition. Mm-hmm. They call him the trickster, so maybe it comes from.
Yeah, probably something like that. Well, and I think, you know, it also has to do with the fact that when something, we don't understand it, it's foreign quote, it's different from the way we operate and do things, then immediately it's trying to fool us or trick us, or there's something wrong with it, or it's bad.
Yes, and at the same time, it comes from this character, so it's evolved.
So, Lisa?
I just wanted to share that when I was biking home, it was still blue, dark blue sky. And there was a huge moon, very low, very big, not full, it's like two thirds. Just that. And it was each time I was turning my head and looking to the right, it was hiding behind a building and then coming up again, appearing and disappearing. And it's just followed me all the way home.
Nice. Yeah, thank you.
Or I followed it. I don't know which way.
Maybe you were always together, so one was not following the other. The moon is actually such a wonderful metaphor because we can only see the moon when there is light shown on it, and the reflection of the sun is, we can only see it then. Otherwise, we don't see it. We don't see the other side of it. We don't see the dark side, but it's there. And when, like Lisa said, it wasn't full, we're seeing only the light aspect of it, but we know that the dark is there, and we can only see the light because the dark is there. If there was no darkness, we would not see the light. Marlon?
Yeah, and the same is with us. We have this bright sky, blue sky, and sometimes I have, and I think we all have dark clouds. It's what we are. And we know the difference very well by now. But the truth is, I have been in depressions and taking those pills, antidepressives. And since I started meditated, I become to become more aware that it's not solid. Those dark skies, they come, and I have to be there and kind of see it. But now I know it will go away. It is just this dark sky will not be there forever. But even, I don't know, every 3 years when I start, the dark cloud starts, I said to myself, maybe it's time to take pills again. I don't know. I'm just really feeling so bad. What is happening? But then let's wait more week and something like this. Let's see. I know this isn't true. It's not solid. I have to trust it. Yeah, and it's true.
Yeah. It takes trust, huh? Like you say, I have to trust in...
Yeah, I have to trust. It's true.
Yeah. Bart?
The story reminded me of the ceremony of last week in our Zendo in The Hague. And Gana Roshi did eye-opening ceremony for the Zendo, for the new image or the new Kanzil. And we had a discussion about this this role of the concilium as a mirror, to look into that mirror. And so the story of this big, I thought it was scary. Such a mirror can be very scary to look into. And I think the same is true for this image of the big sky self. Sometimes it can be scary to look into that. It can be scary to sit across the wall and just see nothing. Sometimes really scary. It seems sometimes it seems very ordinary, sometimes it seems really scary.
Well, and so what's frightening about it?
Well, I don't really know. It's, of course, there's something in me that doesn't like to be swallowed that way.
Mm.
That's the feeling. I'm being swallowed here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and this is why we, you know, we're not thinking consciously, I'm going to resist, but we do resist. Because I will disappear, you know. And so then we continue in our patterns. We continue doing stuff. Maybe we're suffering because of it, but we just keep doing it because, like we say, it's better to stay with the devil we know or think we know. Yeah. Where did the image, the canzion, come from that Michel had?
They bought it in India during a trip that they made with Ganeroshi. And so Ganeroshi and Helen, wife of Michel, they saw it in some shop. Then they went very carefully to Michel and said, well, there is something you have to see. But they already knew that he had to buy it for the altar. So they tricked him into it. Now it's in The Hague. It's a beautiful statue.
So if it's Indian, then it's probably Avalokiteshvara. It wouldn't be Kanzion, would it? I mean, it's an Indian statue. It's a...
No, it's more a Chinese one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So that would be Kuan Yin.
Kuan Yin.
Nice. Yeah, so see, immediately my mind starts saying, oh, so it's Indian or it's Chinese or if it's this or that, you know, figuring out like all the...
I remember some months ago, Joa was giving this Dharma talk. And it was about craving. And I think it was someone that asked Bernie Glassman, perhaps you remember better, what is your biggest crave? And he, I think it was Bernie Glassman. And he said, me. So it's this me, this, we don't want to lose it. We would know what to do without it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Biggest attachment.
Biggest attachment. Craving. Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
It's true. And actually, it's the only attachment, you know, because if we weren't attached to that, then all the rest of it would be nothing, you know. So it's true. So keep in mind the big sky self. When you sit, when you go out, look up at the sky when you go out, you know? We rarely do that, you know, we rarely pay attention, but just really look at it. And see that it's something wondrous, actually. We're out of time. So thank you very much.